Welcome. Thank you. Thank you all for coming to share the Dharma this morning. Today we are in Zazenkai, our one-day session. Many of you here have chosen to give up the full day to return to silence. These extended sittings, whether one day, a weekend, or 7 days, are the most powerful and concentrated forms of Zazen that we engage in. Daily sitting is, of course, crucial to maintaining one's practice. But it is at times, the times when we can engage in the practice for many hours on end, that we have the greatest opportunity to penetrate the great matter. Today we'll take up a koan in the Wumen Guan, the no gate barrier. This is the first classical collection of koans that we work on in our lineage here, although historically it is the last of the compilations that come to us from ancient China. Only the Denko Roku came later from Japanese Zen master Keizan. Case number 46 in the Wumen Guan. Step forward from the top of the pole. The case reads, Master Shi Shuang said, how do you step forward from the top of a 100-foot pole? Another eminent master of former times said, you who sit on top of the pole, of the 100-foot pole, although you have entered the way, it is not yet genuine. Take a step from the top of the pole, and the worlds of the 10 directions are your total body. Wu Men's commentary. Stepping forward, turning back. Is there anything to reject as ignoble or unworthy? Be that as it may, how do you proceed onward from the top of a 100-foot pole? Sa! Wu Men's verse. He darkened the eye in his forehead and clung to the mark on a scale. Throw away body and discard life. And the blind one leads the blind. Shi Shuang Chu Yen, whose Japanese is Sekiso, lived from 986 to 1039 in the Common Era. He was a sixth generation descendant of Lin Chi, and therefore he's a direct Dharma ancestor of Wu Men, and of all of us here. How do you step forward from the top of a 100-foot pole? Stepping forward from the top of the 100-foot pole. Stepping forward. Note that he doesn't say slide back down the pole to where you started. Step forward. In an entirely new direction. The middle way is not some kind of average. It's not a compromise. A monk asked Nanchuan, how can I proceed further from the top of a 100-foot pole? Nanchuan answered, walk on a step further. Don't stop. Walk on. Keep going. Practice never ends. There is no place to abide. There is no there. Most students find that this is a relatively easy koan to demonstrate in Doksan. But to live this koan, to really live it every moment, is the project of lifetimes. When we enter this practice, we begin to discover just how stuck we are in the world. We are stuck in the virtual world of thoughts, delusions, scenarios about past and future, opinions, prejudices, hopes, fears, expectations, and all the rest of it. And the more we practice, the more we realize this, and the harder we strive to let it all go and see beyond. All sincere practitioners from time immemorial strive with their whole being to see past the things of the world, to catch even the most fleeting glimpse of the ultimate, what we sometimes call emptiness. In his commentary on Mu, Wu Men writes, "You must make your whole body one great inquiry. With your 360 bones and joints and your 84,000 pores, concentrate on this one word, Mu. Day and night, keep digging into it. How then should one work with it? With might and main, devote yourself to Mu and exhaust all your life energy on this one word, Mu." This is the great challenge we all face. It is called climbing the mountain practice. If we work sincerely and consistently on Mu, Shikantaza, or any other enlightenment practice, at some point it does happen. We get a glimpse from the top of the mountain, the top of the pole. And what do we see there at the top? Nothing. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Nothing stirs. Not even the realization that nothing stirs. But once there is an initial kensho, a glimpse perceived, then what? If you are familiar with the ox herding pictures, remember that this is only the third picture out of 10. After kensho, there are 7 more to go. And this is when the difficulties really start. There are many Zen sicknesses, and one of them is to get stuck in the concept of emptiness. To be stuck anywhere, even in the most exalted states of spiritual awakening, the deepest samadhi, the highest bliss, is a sickness. One master calls it making your living in a ghost cave. Shui To calls it carrying a board. If you think of a construction worker carrying a 2x12 on his shoulder, he's blocking out half his vision. Master Keizan, in his commentary on one of the cases in the Denko Roku, warns, "Become intimate with the place where no trace of karma ever appears, but do not retreat or hide there." As for the top of that pole, the top of the mountain, no one lives there. No human, no deva, no demon, not even Buddhas dwell there. All is vast and emptiness. There is nothing to function. No compassion, no love, no generosity. To be attached to things is illusion, but to encounter the absolute is not yet enlightenment, says Sherto. But once one has had that insight, there is a tendency to want to stay there, to reform one's life on a massive scale and try to live on in the bliss of Satori. But this ignores the reality of our day-to-day existence. There's a book title, "After Enlightenment Comes the Laundry." That pretty much sums it up. Don't get hung up on the notion of some kind of spiritually pure life. There is a humorous folk tale from medieval Europe in which a woman gets elected pope, but nobody realizes it. Until one day, in the midst of some deeply solemn procession, she suddenly gave birth. The surrounding cardinals and other dignitaries were scandalized that the profound spirituality of the occasion should be so defiled by the blood and mess of childbirth. The point being that pure spirituality is pure nonsense. What is it then to truly step forward from the top of the pole? Stepping forward is right action. But it's not right as opposed to wrong. It's not about good as opposed to evil. For someone caught up in the delusion, in the trap of right and wrong, good and evil, and so on, the concept of good emerges from the passing of one's own judgment, and the ultimate criteria of good or evil is the small ego self. Every judgment I deliver falls back upon myself. What, in my opinion, is good? What is holy? What is correct? It is precisely in the striving after an ultimate good that one falls into evil. The greatest atrocities are committed in the name of the highest good. The higher one's motives, the greater the wrongs that one gives oneself permission to commit. The first sentence of Aristotle's Ethics reads, "Every skill and every inquiry and similarly every action and choice of action is thought to have some good as its object." No one desires evil. No matter how horrendous the action, the motive behind it is always, always some concept of good. And therein lies the great danger. Harmful actions do not arise from some conscious malevolence, but from our separation from others and alienation from our own nature. Right action is action that is in accord with the great reality. Judgment of good, evil, right, wrong are abandoned. The action that is beyond right and wrong, good and evil, consists in action without judgment or opinions or concepts or a sense of I doing something to or for someone else. Whatever action comes out of judgment is not genuine. It is only a manifestation of the judgment. To act genuinely, to step forward, is not just a matter of suppressing or refraining from judgment, but of completely letting go of any desire to know. The real knowledge of prajna, transcendent wisdom, comes solely in action without reflection upon the small self. Real, genuine action arises from the discovered or rediscovered non-separateness, from interbeing, the deep understanding that you and I are not separate and never were. In that instant, good and evil, right and wrong, do not enter in. The action is no longer one possibility of many, but one thing. Just this one doing. This one doing fills you up. You become the doing, and the doing becomes you. But that can't happen if you are already filled with thoughts, opinions, scenarios, and so on. You first have to empty out. Again, Master Wu Men, gradually you purify yourself, eliminating mistaken knowledge and attitudes you have held from the past, casting away all illusory thoughts and discriminations. Inside and outside become one. This is our practice, cutting off the mind road. Only in this process of emptying out in our zazen can we come to the point of this great one doing. This is the Tao of no doubt. It is choicelessness, liberation, simplicity. This great coming forth itself is not something we have to strive for. Your Buddha nature comes forth every moment from the very beginning. The truth appears, there being no delusion, says Dogen. All we have to do in our practice is pay attention. Continuous, unrelenting attention. It is in the dropping away of body and mind that we genuinely come forth. Well, it's easy to say. So we have to keep at it. Why? Because, let's face it, we don't really believe in it or have complete faith in it. It is this mistrust that is the problem. And we get past that mistrust through a lot of practice. In the Mountains and Waters Sutra, Dogen writes, "If you doubt mountains walking, you do not know your own walking. It is not that you do not walk, but that you do not know or understand your own walking. Since you do know your own walking, you should fully know the green mountains walking. If walking stops, Buddha ancestors do not appear. If walking ends, the Buddha Dharma cannot reach the present. Walking forward does not cease. Walking backward does not cease. Walking forward does not obstruct walking backward. Walking backward does not obstruct walking forward. This is called the mountains flow and the flowing mountains." Now, I've pulled this stunt before, but once again, let me change Dogen's wording a bit. If you doubt your zazen, you do not know your own practice. It is not that you do not practice or do zazen, but that you do not know or understand your practice. Since you do know your own practice, you should fully know zazen. If zazen stops, Buddha ancestors do not appear. If zazen ends, the Buddha Dharma cannot reach the present. Stepping forward, that is coming forth, does not cease. Zazen does not cease. Coming forth in activity does not obstruct zazen. Zazen does not obstruct coming forth. This is called the mountains flow and the flowing mountains. You know your own zazen. How can you not? Your zazen knows zazen, even as a tree knows its treeness. Taking the backward step into zazen to the absolute top of the pole does not interfere with walking forward, stepping forward from the top of the pole. How could it? They are not separate. Climbing the mountain is not separate from descending the mountain. We talk about them as though they were, as though they were. But our Buddha nature is not divisible, not in time, not in space. In our practice, we sometimes make the distinctions between what we call samadhi and everyday life. But in the great reality, these distinctions do not exist. Look at the carpet in front of you. Is that carpet in anything other than the deepest samadhi? And does it not at the same time come forth? Is the flowering cherry not in the deepest samadhi, even as it comes forth with its color and fragrance? You yourself are the same. Your breath, your hands, your feet, your hair, and your spit are all in the deepest samadhi coming forth. There is really no possibility of getting stuck in emptiness or anywhere else for that matter. In emptiness, there is nothing. There is no one to get stuck, nothing to get stuck to. If you are stuck, it is in a concept of emptiness, a delusion. But stuckness itself is a delusion. How can anything be stuck? Nothing ceases. But there is yet another trap here, the trap of complacency. Yes, we are all fundamentally enlightened. We come forth whether we know it or not. And yet still we must practice. We have to do all the stuff. Sit zazen. Practice mindfulness. Practice chanting. Samu. Zazenkai. Sesshin, all the rest of it. As has been said many times, we do not practice in order to become something. Our practice is itself the expression of our enlightened Buddha nature. A fish does not swim in order to become a better fish or to become one with water. A fish swimming is the ultimate expression of water and of the fish. They are not separate. But it is only through swimming in the water that the fish and the water are realized, made real. It is only through our practice that we ourselves and our nature are realized. Sitting on the mat in deep zazen is stepping back and coming forth. So is washing the dishes, changing a flat tire, writing a letter, playing with children, or with a cat. But only if it is done as practice. To speak of stepping forward outside the context of practice makes no sense. Only to the extent that you have climbed the pole can you step forth from the pole. One song in the Book of Serenity writes, "Where the ancients held still, they could let go to advance a step from atop the pole. When they let go, they could hold still and stand like a 1,000-foot wall. Why were they so free and independent? Why indeed?" Wu Men's commentary. Stepping forth, turning back. Is there anything to reject as ignoble or unworthy? Be that as it may, how do you proceed onward from the top of 100-foot pole? Ha! Stepping forward, turning back, they are not separate. Reject nothing, pursue nothing. Not activity, not silence. Enlightenment is the total acceptance of all beings by all beings. So be fearless. Dive in. Live your life as practice. Practice living your life. Our lives on and off the mat are nothing more than this. Not avoiding fantasy, not seeking truth. then and only then does your every action become genuine. Only then are the worlds of the 10 directions your total body. And what about that? Ha! Well, Wu Man can't reach out from the written page and whack you one with his stick. So this is the next best thing. Keep moving. Just because you're all sitting there doesn't necessarily mean that you're practicing. You can sit and murmur moo until the cows come home and get nowhere. Right where you are, let go your hold on the cliff and step forward into the abyss of your practice, into moo, into the breath, into the why. And then keep going again and again and again. Wu Man's verse. He darkened the eye in his forehead and clung to the mark on the scale. Throw away body and discard life, and the blind one leads the blind. Darken the eye in his forehead, clung to the mark on the scale. We all tend to do that, don't we? Here's the answer. Now I've got it. Now I know what it's really about. Well, I thought that was it, but now I know that this is it. We want to cling to a mark. Grab, 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 grab. Throw away body and discard life, and the blind one leads the blind. But then who are these blind ones? And how do they lead the blind? Interesting question, no? I refer you to Roshi's Teisho from last Sunday on the person of three disabilities. Part of Shui Do's verse, the case 45 in the Hekigan Roku, reads, "Now I have thrown it away into Lake Seiko and sailed before the wind. Who will share the coolness with me?" Yes, throw it away. Throw everything away. Ignorance, enlightenment, everything. Then sail before the wind in complete and effortless accord. How wonderful. How wonderful. Who will share it? We all share it. Even though we may not know it yet, we all share it. I was going to try to write a capping verse of my own for this talk, but not surprisingly, Walt Whitman beat me to it. Love the earth and sun and animals. Despise riches. Give alms to everyone that asks. Stand up for the stupid and the crazy. Devote your income and labor to others. And your very flesh shall be a great poem. Together with all beings, we realize the way.